It was 3 weeks ago we started a series that we call Healthy. And if you look at that word there, there's a bold part and then there's an unbold part. Heal thy. There's something in that word that is pretty powerful for us here to think about, and not just for us on a Sunday morning, but outside of here. I've had conversations with people that are in the medical field that have had these reactions to our sermons where they said if people actually stepped into this, if we actually stepped into this, we would be healthier physically. It'd be good for our bodies. We've had people that have reached out to us that are in the field of mental health and thrilled about the series that we've been in, Heal Thy, Be Healthy, and said that the stuff that we're talking about, they're thrilled that we're talking about it, because if we were to step into this, it actually would result in better mental health for us. And we know, of course, that when we talk about Jesus, we can talk about him in this way. We can think about the works of Jesus, his miracles and the signs and wonders that he performed, enough that John actually said if you were to record everything that Jesus did, the world itself wouldn't have room enough for the volumes that would be written. We could talk about the words of Jesus, where he spoke in parables and spoke to individuals and his words had power and life in them. Or we could talk about the ways of Jesus, the way that he walked, the way that he practiced life, the things that he did, and know that the role of a student is to follow the way of their rabbi, to walk like their rabbi did. It would be right to speak about the ways of Jesus or the words of Jesus or the works of Jesus. Sometimes we talk about all three, but in this series, we've been zeroing in on the ways of Jesus, believing what the medical profession would say, that these things are healthy for us physically, what the people in psychology would say, that this is really good for us as we think about mental health, and we know it's just good for us because it's actually the way of the Creator. And this morning I want to speak about slowing. And it's one of the reasons I love the season that we're in. When I think about the seasons of Michigan, I absolutely love winter. And I know I might be in a minority here, but I love it. It's like top three or four of the seasons that we have. It's like my favorite, right? And even though it doesn't hit the top of my list, I actually do love winter. And I love it because of this. It seems to provide space where we're not out in the middle of the yard and doing weeding and lawning and all that stuff. We don't have all this outside activity. Sometimes it puts us inside, curled up on the couch, have a blanket over top of you, reading a book, sitting next to the fireplace, big snowflakes coming down, like we're in this protected environment in the middle of a snow globe. I love the season where we can actually focus sometimes on friends intentionally, getting reacquainted again with some friends. And just recently, I sent out a group text to some friends that I was a part of a ministry with in Holland, Michigan back in the late 90s, and sent out a group text and just said, remember when we used to hang out together? Remember when? And out of that, we're going to actually get together and have dinner. I can't wait to spend time with them again. I had opportunity with my wife to reconnect with a couple, and we get together periodically with them, and it was that time again to get together again, and there's just something about sitting there. We're not in a hurry. We're just sitting there. The waitress, the place was packed. It took forever for the person to come over, and we're like, it doesn't matter. We're not in a hurry. We're just with each other. We've been friends for 30 years. Are you ready to order? Not yet. And you better leave a good tip, right? If you're going to take somebody's table for that long, leave a good tip. So we sat there and just enjoyed each other. I had opportunity, and this was my favorite of these opportunities, but I had opportunity over the last several weeks here to sit down with students that were in the very first ministry I was a part of. They're not students anymore. They're adults. But some 30 years ago to have them in youth group and to listen to one who's a doctor and to talk with him, to have another who's a pastor over in Muskegon to sit with her over coffee and to share stories with her and be so proud of what she's doing, to sit with another that's a PA and a physician's assistant. And I want to tell you his story. With permission, he's a part of this community of faith. He belongs to this place, and I ran into him not too long ago out in the lobby. Didn't know he was coming to the church, and I saw him. I'm like, there's the adult version of a student that used to be in my youth group, and we talked and got coffee together. And as I sat across from the table from him and listened to his story, I was absolutely riveted. Drinking coffee, listening to his story, I couldn't have predicted where the story went. The first part, not so hard to understand. He was young, getting started in his career in the medical field. His wife, the same, in the medical field, and the two of them on a fast track together, running hard, running ragged, as he described it, just giving themselves, earning their spurs, if you will, in the medical field, finding themselves exhausted. In fact, he was describing and gave me full permission to talk about this, that the margins for his life just started to shrink. And he had this edge to him that he wasn't real thrilled with. Got edgy around people and found himself in a place where his work, the people in his workforce there, actually began to describe when you blow up, when you've lost it a bit, when you're about ready to break the computer screen. They called it after his last name. They nicknamed it. Be like going Vandermeer on something, right? Or going whatever your last name on something. He got that labeled for going off on something. Something was out of sync and he didn't like it. I asked him about his marriage during that period, and he openly talked about it and said, you know, it wasn't what we dreamed when we stood at the altar and said, hey, this is where we want to head down the road. Yeah, that all of this busy and hurry and the life and the running hard, it just kind of started consuming it. And we were surviving, but to say we were thriving, no. How about your children? How about your two girls? How are you doing as a dad? And I loved this. He was so humble on it. And just said, well, be honest, I still have room to grow. And I'm like, me too. Me too. Our kids are out of the home, but I still have room to grow. There are still times that I think, why did I just say that way? And I have to back up and say, I'm sorry. And yeah, we're all growing as parents, so me too. But he did describe it this way, that for sure, because of the pace he was running at, because of the margins being so thin, that he wasn't all that he wanted to be to his children during that period. Now, if we were to predict where this thing is headed, I think many of us could put a dot on a piece of paper and said, we could label that dot right there where this thing is headed. It's not headed in a good direction. But I couldn't have predicted where this headed. Because what he told me, somehow I missed this. What he told me was at the age of 37, he had a heart attack. Heart attack. And if you're going to have a heart attack, he had it in the best of all possible places. He was in the hospital, actually, when it happened. He was working there. He was just a few floors away from the ER. And when he came out of surgery, his wife was there. And after that, you can imagine, they began to have conversation about the pace of their life. They began to have conversation about the way things were rolling. And they decided, we're not going to keep rolling this direction. We're going to back it up a bit. And they decided that they were going to slow the pace of their life down. And as I listened to Aaron speak, I had this question in my mind that may be in your mind. And so I asked her, let's ask it. Like, why did you decide to slow down? Why? Dig deep. Why did you decide to slow down? And I love what he said. He didn't say, because of my heart. He was in physically good condition on the outside way back when. Has exercised his whole adult life. Took care of his body. It was the stress level that was on the inside that you couldn't see that was coming out in weird ways. But you couldn't see it. It wasn't his heart. It wasn't his physical well-being. What he said was, my wife Daughter one, daughter two. For this, the work he's doing, no question, anyone that's in the medical field, you have chosen to give your life to something that matters, to people that matter. Healing matters. And what he was saying is, yes, this really matters. But there's one, two, three things that matter even more to me. So it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder about the pace at which we live. It makes me think about how fast sometimes we run. It makes me think about this whole thing that we do called life and the speed of busy and how it pulls us in and this gravitational pull almost, it feels like, toward the word busy. It makes me wonder about what would happen if we were to slow down. Actually practice slowing. And I get it. That some of us were running so hard that when we hit the ground on Monday morning, we've already started thinking about it on Sunday night. And we hit the ground Monday morning. We can't let off the pedal until the end of the week, if even then. Because there are significant and really important things that if we don't do it, it's going to fall. But my question is, what if the thing that actually falls is you? What if the thing that actually falls, yeah, this is significant and really important, but what if the thing that really falls is what is most important? What if the thing that really falls is actually the closest people to you, the relationships that matter the most? We've been talking about the ways of Jesus. I actually think there's a way of Jesus, a way of living that he carried out in his very actions and invited his closest disciples to say, walk this way. This is the way I walk. Now you walk this way. Follow me in this. In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 5, we see a story that points to a rhythm that was in Jesus' life. Luke, the author of this, tells us about a crowd of people prior to this story that Jesus was with, and then Jesus withdrawing from that crowd and finding himself face to face with a person. So chapter 5, verse 12, it reads like this. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell on his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said. Be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, don't tell anyone. Huh. Don't tell anyone. But go show yourself to the priests and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. Yet the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places. The Gospel of Luke, written by a man named Luke, a guy who actually wanted to record an eyewitness account with his own eyes, experiencing what he did following Jesus, knowing about Jesus, walking in the ways of Jesus, wanted to get the message of Jesus out to other people, to tell them about his works, to tell them about his words, to tell the world, in particular one man that he was writing to, but then beyond that, for the generations to hear about the ways of Jesus, that we might know that the one who was and is and always will be, came into this world, lived in this world, died on a cross, resurrected from that grave, and there's some things about his works and his words and his ways that matter for us that are here on planet Earth. In one part of the Gospel of Luke, he's talking about crowds. Actually, the chapter that precedes this one, Luke 4, crowds of people that were surrounding Jesus coming in. How many? We don't know. Just like Matthew, another man that wrote an eyewitness account, or Mark, or John, all of them who wrote eyewitness accounts about Jesus, every one of them have scenes where crowds of people, sometimes so large, they don't even tell us how many were in the crowd, that Jesus could barely move in the crowd. They were pressing in, wanting to touch him, knowing there was healing in Christ, bringing their ill, their sick, their broken to Jesus that he might heal them. Well, in this fourth chapter of the Gospel of Luke, we find Jesus. It appears that maybe even all the way from sunset to daybreak, that he's in the process of being surrounded by crowds of people all night long, ministering to people, healing people. We don't know that that's the case, but it kind of leaves us with that. But we do know that at one point, Jesus slips away. He walks away from all the need that was there, all the people that he had shown compassion to, and the hordes more that were still lined up. He slips away in the dark and goes to a lonely place. It's like this game of hide and seek that's going on, because the people are like, where did he go? And they went out to find him. Only in this case, we get the image that Jesus didn't really actually, the picture that Jesus really didn't want to be found. And then preceding that, we find Jesus having a conversation with a guy who had been living with an illness that put you on the outskirts of society, put you in a place that actually, if you were to have somebody that was downwind of you, you had to say to them, I'm unclean, keep your distance from me. This man had leprosy, and Jesus doesn't just keep his distance. He closes the gap, reaches out, touches him. Immediately, this man is healed. And then Jesus gives this command to him. He says, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone what I just did. Like, time out. Why? Why would we not tell somebody what you just did? Because this was amazing. You showed compassion to me. You healed me. You restored me. Don't tell anyone. Why? Well, we get our clue in the next verse about why, and it says this. Even though Jesus told him, don't tell anyone, and maybe he didn't, but the result was that yet, despite him telling him that, the news about him spread all the more so that, here's the why, so that crowds of people came to hear him and be healed of their sicknesses. And at first glance, we would say, that's a good thing. Didn't Jesus come to heal the broken? Yes. Didn't he come to mend people? Yes. That's part of his works. But we have to understand that he didn't just come in order to invest in the immediate. He came to invest in that which would be. It wasn't just that generation in that crowd. It was the masses that would come behind. It wasn't just the few while his feet were planted here on earth. It would be all of us who would be here after one generation after another, all the way to 2020. That he would pour in, not just to these people that mattered to him, but leave the important to invest in 1, 2, 3 disciples in particular, and then the 12 in general, that they might take this good news and bring it to the world. Jesus had a way of pulling away from what seemed to be urgent to invest in what really was mission center. In fact, it says it this way at the end of this portion we read, that Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. He would step back. We can see it in one story after another around Jesus. He's talking to his disciples, having conversation with them, and says, the crowd is here, the need is big, and we've ministered some here, but we have other work to do. We have conversations you and I still need to have. Let's go to the other side of the lake. And they would get in a boat and row to the other side of the lake. One of those stories, Jesus says, I'll meet you over there. And then he just takes a walk. He walks over there. I don't know how slow you walk when you're walking on water. I've never walked on water, but that's what he did. But he said, I'll see you over there. And he's teaching them something. As he walks across the lake to the other side, he withdrew to lonely places in order to pray, in order to invest. He had this capacity to step away from busy in order to step into what really, really mattered. Here's what I wonder. What would it look like for us to follow the ways of Jesus on this? What would it look like for us to, because Jesus, his actions were such that he would walk away from busy, crowded, pressed in on, can't sleep from sunset to daybreak. He would deliberately walk away from that. His actions, or the way he acted, another way of saying it, we could actually say he had this active resistance to busy, that when it pressed in too much, he did something to resist that busy, to slow down. What would it look like for us to do that? Because the rabbi would often sit with his disciples and have conversation and use his words. This rabbi lived in such a way his disciples could see his signs. But this rabbi walked in a way that every other rabbi had this desire that you would walk in my dust. Where my feet hit, your feet will hit. The way I walk is the way you walk. My rhythm will be your rhythm. He deliberately said this is the way we are meant to live. Sometimes we walk away from busy on purpose and slow down. What would it look like for us to practice that kind of resistance that would change the way we even think about busy, that would resist the gravitational pull, the speed of it that we feel cranking us up on the inside? And I want to say something about practice, because I think many of us have heard this before, that practice makes it permanent. Practice makes permanence. You practice it enough in the right way, and it'll actually become a part of who you are. It'll be the way that you live. One of our members actually sent me this and said, it is easier to act your way into a new way of feeling than it is to feel your way into a new way of acting, so that we act in such a way that it actually begins to change us. I heard a true story of a police department, and they had this practice, and I think it's a brilliant practice, that every single week they would practice a new thing. Every single morning before they went out on the force, or every evening before they went out on the force, they would practice the same thing for a week to get it down. And this particular week, true story here, this particular week they were learning how to take a gun away from a bad guy. That, and I'm no expert in this, but the way it was described is you grab the barrel and then you come underneath and you get your hand behind the wrist and push against the wrist and you'll have their gun in your hand. And so they would practice that 10, 12 times each, and take the gun out and hand it back, and then take the gun out and hand it back to the guy. Then he would practice on you and take the gun out and hand it back. Well, it happened that week that this police officer was on duty and some bad guy stepped out. A gun came out. He reached over instinctively, because he had practiced it, grabbed the barrel of the gun, took his hand behind the wrist, pushed through it, and had the gun in his hand. And with all the adrenaline flying, he handed the gun back to the bad guy. True story. It was like, good grief. And took it back away from him again. Man, if you're the bad guy at that point, just put your hands behind your back. Like, come on. So, what I'm saying here is that practice can make it permanent. Be careful what you practice. But what if we practiced? What if we practiced some things that pushed against that gravitational pull of busy that we all feel? And I wonder about these practices for us. Number one, drive the speed limit. Like, are you kidding me? I got places to go, man. Exactly. I'm not saying you have to do it all the time. You should. I'm not saying I probably should. Not probably. I should too, right? I just own it. Yeah, we have this idea that we can drive 7, maybe 9 miles over the speed limit, still not get pulled over. It might be true, might not be true, but we have that idea. But once in a while, as an act of resistance to busy that's inside of us to say, I'm not doing it. I'm going to drive the speed limit. And you find yourself pulling over. Take the slow lane. Sometimes that's the fast lane and somebody else has decided to go slow in the fast lane. Don't be that guy. But take the slow lane. And if you find yourself in the slow lane and you're behind somebody that's actually doing like 20 miles under the speed limit, just stay there. And you'll know what it feels like to be retired for like 20 years. And it's like, I got nowhere to go, man. I'm not in a rush, right? I'm in no hurry here. In fact, number two, tell yourself you're not in a hurry. It works. I'm not in a hurry. And when you're on your way out your door to church, and you're looking at your watch, and you're pushing the, what if you were to just say, hey, we're not in a hurry. We're not in a hurry. I heard Greg this morning say, it's okay for you that are walking in, that are coming in a little bit late. Today, we're not in a hurry. I'm not suggesting you all come late because you missed something, but you get the point. Just tell yourself, I'm not in a hurry. Number three, choose the longest checkout lane on purpose. What's going on inside of you? Check it. When you're going into the grocery store, you're looking around like, which one is the fastest lane here? And what? Just inside go, I'm not in a hurry. And take the longest checkout lane. I did it. Be careful with this. I did it yesterday. And I just had a handful of things. And I went, I'm just going to get in the longest checkout lane. I'm going to do this. I've done it before, but I'm going to do it on purpose. And I got behind this woman that had a big cart of groceries. And I went, she's probably wondering, what the world is he standing behind me for? It's kind of weird, but so be careful with that. But anyway, choose the longest checkout lane. Number four, parent your phone. Sometimes your phone starts blowing up and you're feeling like, if I don't answer it, I'm going to drop something. What if you just went, shh, you're not behaving right now. I'm shutting you down for a while. I'll come back to you, but I'm shutting you down for a while. What if you parented your phone in this way, that you go to bed before I do, I put you down early, and I'm going to make you sleep in tomorrow. And you let that thing sleep in and you just choose to resist that thing that keeps buzzing. How about number five? Show up 10 minutes early for a meeting. I'm not saying you walk in the door because there may be another meeting that's right there. But if you show up 10 minutes early for a meeting and you're traveling somewhere, you ought to see how easy it is to actually drive the speed limit. How easy it is to actually tell yourself, I'm in no hurry. Show up 10 minutes early, and when you get there, there's no internal push. You're resisting busy, and on the inside, it feels really good. And if you have that space of 10 minutes, use it wisely. It may be a moment to just say, God, I got a minute to pause and to spend with you. Number six, walk slowly. Practice it. Like if you feel inside busy rising up, push back on an active resistance to go, I'm going to walk slowly. In fact, I'm going to park at the farthest away spot possible. I'm going to walk slowly all the way in and resist busy. Number seven, journal and pray. I think it's sort of a lost art for many. Picking up a pen and a notebook to actually write in feels pretty old school, and it's a beautiful old school thing. What if you actually hand wrote a letter every single day? Every day, and say, I'm not in a hurry here. I'm just going to write a handwritten letter, and here's how I'm going to mail it. I'm going to start by saying, good morning, God. Good evening, God. It's been an amazing day. Thank you. I had an opportunity to speak with, to talk to. Thank you for being in the conversation. I had an opportunity to think about the gift when I got a phone call from one of my kids or from one of my good friends. Thank you for good friends. Whatever it might be, to write a letter to God and send it right here from your heart. This thing's called prayer. To get a habit of just slowing down, to pick up a pen and a piece of paper and write. Jesus had this practice that when the urgent, when the stuff that mattered, the people that really mattered to him, they were about ready to press in on the one thing that mattered the most. He would spend enough time there, but say, I can't do everything there. I need to step over here. And he would withdraw to lonely places and pray. That's our invitation. Amen.